Pure attachment will unite us even at the expense of moral and religious duties, dharma. Destiny will sometimes bring us together and sometimes separate us. So put by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The gopis came out to meet Krishna in the dead of night, and when they heard the sound of his flute, Srila Rupa Goswami has accordingly composed a nice verse that describes the beautiful boy called Govinda standing by the bank of the Yamuna with his flute to his lips in the shining moonlight. Those who want to enjoy life in the materialistic way of society, friendship and love, should not go to the Yamuna to see the form of Govinda. The sound of Lord Krishna's flute is so sweet that it has made the gopis forget all about their relationships with their kinsmen and flee to Krishna in the dead of night. By leaving home in that way, the gopis transgressed the Vedic injunctions of household life. This indicates that when natural feelings of love for Krishna become fully manifest, a devotee can neglect conventional social rules and regulations. In the material world, we are situated in designative positions only, but pure devotional service begins when one is freed from all designations. When love for Krishna is awakened, the designative positions are overcome. The spontaneous attraction of Sri Krishna for his dearest parts and parcels generates an enthusiasm that obliges Sri Krishna and the gopis to meet together. To celebrate this transcendental enthusiasm, there is need of a sentiment of separation between the lover and beloved. In the condition of material tribulation, no one wants the pangs of separation, but in the transcendental form, the very same separation, being absolute in its nature, strengthens the ties of love and enhances the desire of the lover and beloved to meet. The period of separation evaluated transcendentally is more relishable than the actual meeting, which lacks the feelings of increasing anticipation because the lover and beloved are both present. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patithanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, and welcome and good morning to every single one of you today. For today's morning class for in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila, chapter 4, text number 31. Pure attachment will unite us even at the expense of moral and religious duties, dharma. Destiny will sometimes bring us together and sometimes separate us. What an advanced topic. Very, very complicated. Probably the most elevated topic that even the Vedas personified amongst themselves do not discuss. What to speak of reveal. And therefore, this topic can only be spoken by Lord Shri Krishna at that pinnacle of moment in the spiritual universe where his personal energies manifest before him in the form of the gopis. This discussion isn't really meant for anyone outside of that specific circle. Completely, by far, unqualified to speak anything on this verse. It's just extremely out of the realm of a very simple, aspiring grihastha. But nevertheless, I'm going to try to speak on this verse from different perspectives, which doesn't actually touch the verse. Because I might get in trouble otherwise. In this verse, as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, the reason why this verse is extremely important in every way whatsoever, listen to this very carefully. Pure attachment will unite us even at the expense of moral and religious duties, dharma. Destiny will sometimes bring us together and sometimes separate us. The reason why Lord Shri Krishna is saying this verse to the gopis, that sometimes devera gatana. Now the word devera is a corrupted form of the word deva from Bengali into Sanskrit. And the word deva actually means not only destiny, but the providence ruled and established by the celestial persons of the universe. In other words, the demigods. However, Kaviraj Goswami very carefully retranslates this very word few verses previously by indicating that the word devera refers to yogamaya. Because whenever Lord Shri Krishna and his associates are questioned in any type of leela, that leela is always answered by explaining it is the arrangement of yogamaya. In other words, his internal potency. So the word devera here is very specific. In the conversational language of Sanskrit, in the very same way that Muslims, Islamic people, say, by the will of Allah, we shall meet. In the very same way, it was a common aspect of culture that for those people who speak Sanskrit, they always end any sentence with the word devecha. By God's will, by the will of destiny, we shall meet, we shall have prasad, we shall do kirtan, etc., etc. So the word devera is a very popular word in Vedic culture. And therefore this verse is also being used by Shri Krishna. Now the reason why, kabu namile, kabu mile, that sometimes we will meet, sometimes we will be separated. The reason why this is so important for Gaudiya Vaishnavas, because it was only through this aspect of sometimes meeting and sometimes not meeting that the Maha Mantra descended into this world. Because the Shruti texts, the Vedas explain that amongst all various types of mantras, if we can just for one moment imagine that every mantra is a form of a gopi. And I will later on explain this through the verses of the Atharva Veda. But for now, if we can understand that the various mantras of the Vedas are various celestial gopis. So what is the Maha Mantra? So at the time of when Narada questioned Brahma, at the beginning of creation, that I see in Kali Yuga so many vices, so many issues, so many problems. Therefore, santare yamiti. What is the way by which we can cross beyond all material tribulations? Then Lord Brahma, Hiranyagarbha Uvacha. Vyasadeva explains that the personality, not only Lord Brahma, but he calls him Hiranyagarbha, the person who was born from a golden womb. In other words, the only person ever born from a male. The supreme male, Lord Narayana. The only contradiction in the universe is Lord Brahma's birth. The personality of Godhead, Narayana. From his womb, Lord Brahma appeared. There was no association with Lakshmi at this point. Harinagarbha Uvacha, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Iti Shuroshaka Nam Nam, Kali Kalimesha Nashanam, Nata Paratarupaya, Sarvedeshu Drishyate. So this verse in the Kali Santana Upanishad explains that amongst all types of mantras, this Maha Mantra is supreme. And it stops at that point. Now further on, we find in the Pancharatra Agamas the description of why this Maha Mantra is supreme. It is explained that before the manifestation of the material universe, so when in the beautiful daylight sky, where there was no dark clouds, and there was probably a speck of dark cloud in the far end of the spiritual universe, which had not manifested, the material ingredients, the Mahatattva, had not been impregnated by Lord Vishnu's blink, by which Lord Shiva appeared and impregnated Prakriti, Purusham Prakriti. Before that time, in the pinnacle realm of Goloka Vrindavan, during the Rasa Leela, when Lord Shri Krishna had celebrated his pastimes with the Ashtagopis, the eight principal gopis that are personal manifestations of the Yogamaya potency, having spent the entire night together on the Sharad Purnima, when the time came for separation, in other words, to go back home and go asleep. At that point, because of the gopis were engrossed completely in love towards Sri Krishna, they could not take that separation. their eyes were themselves be turning into tears. They had no eyes. The complete bodies were covered with water. At that point, because Sri Krishna was leaving the association of the gopis, the only way they could bring back Sri Krishna and associate with him in the exact same way they were associating with Sri Krishna in the Rasa Leela was when Srimati Radhika recited the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. And while reciting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, she felt none different to the association of Sri Krishna. And then later on, much later on, obviously in the spiritual there is no time, but when, as the Yajurveda explains, Kamayata Praja Srije Yeti, when Lord Narayana desired to create the material universe, at that point, the Vedas personified, manifested through the sound of the Omkar. And the Omkar was blown through the flute of Sri Krishna. And the sound of Lord Sri Krishna's Venu, Lord Sri Krishna's Dvani, Lord Sri Krishna's flute, that Vedic vibration is one aspect of the beach syllables of the Mahamantra. And then going back to the Vedas, then the Vedas manifested the Purusha Sukta, the four Vedas, and then we have the Itihas Purana, the Pancharatrika scriptures, etc., etc. So this verse is therefore very important, because this verse provides the original source of Sri Krishna's message to this world, in other words, in the form of the Vedas. And obviously as Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we go straight to the source, the Mahamantra, and extract that from this pastime. So therefore, my understanding of this verse is from that perspective. Obviously, Srila Prabhupada has already explained about the relationship between the loved and the beloved, etc., etc. And by this separation of Vipalamba Seva, Raga and love develops. But obviously that's not something for us to understand, because if we try to practice that amongst each other, we probably develop hatred. You know, why is he not texting me back? Why is he not answering my voicemails? You know, why does he, as they say in modern terms of England, blank me, etc., etc. So, you know, this type of separation doesn't exist in the material world. This is only a very pure spiritual means. The gopis of Vrindavan were not people like ourselves who then through sadhana bhakti attained Sri Krishna's association. The gopis are personal manifestations of the internal energy of Sri Krishna, eternally liberated, eternally in his pastimes. And the Shastras explain that there are various circles of gopis. Now the word gopi simply means personalities who are engaged in maintaining cows. Now the question arises sometimes, especially in the Rigveda Samhita, the question arises, why is God, because the word they use is gopya, why is God considered to be original and supreme while he's hanging around with cows? Why not Narayana, who sits on the ocean of milk? The demigods cannot even approach him. They have to go to the ocean of milk, and only by the recitation of the Purusha Sukta, beginning with the word Sahasra Shirsha Purushaha, that my dear Lord with 1,000 eyes, 1,000 heads, 1,000 ears, because you can hear us, therefore please hear my plea. Come as Sri Krishna to destroy Kamsa, etc., etc. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the house of Srivas Thakur, manifesting his universal form, Srivas Thakur, Advaita Acharya, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, the entire Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they once again propitiated Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the very same way that previously Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva done so to Lord Sri Vishnu by reciting the Purusha Sukta. So the gopis of Vrindavan, they and Sri Krishna appears in the household of cows, because cows in the, especially the Vedas, are not only symbols, but they actually represent the most purest substance by which any person can attain love of God. And that pure substance comes from the byproduct of the cow, milk. Milk is not just a liquid. Milk is considered, at least according to Ayurveda, the reason why every living entity is able to sustain their prana shakti in their body or their life air. And for that reason, Krishna, in order to prioritize milk, He decided. Remember, he decided. He arranged everything. There was no such thing as evolution and etc., etc. He decided that milk shall be the foundational substance to raise every fetus into a human being or animal, etc., etc. And therefore, as we know, children can subsist for many, many years without any intake of raw food, just subsisting on milk. And especially for a child, milk has the potential that when taken, expands the intelligence by which one can then appreciate and understand and receive the Vedas. Which is why, even as Bhatta Goswami explains, Gopal Bhatta Goswami explains, that is why even before the fetus is born, on the day of birth, at least when the fetus is in the fourth month, using a divine porcupine quill, the bride should be pricked on top of the head through the Simantanayana. And by doing so, the knowledge of the three Vedas descend in the fetus, in the heart of the fetus, by which the very beginning of education is initiated, even before birth. And therefore milk, the breast milk which is given, as the Ayurveda Shastra explains, that Radhika personally appearing in the form of the mother of all wisdom, Saraswati, she expands herself as the breast milk. And when the mother then places that milk in the mouth of that child, half a spiritual life has already been given. Then it's just a matter of cultivation, once birth is done. And therefore Sri Krishna, for many, many reasons, to explain the importance of cows, the importance of milk, the purity of it, and therefore it is white, the eternality of it, and how milk is actually considered to be nectar, it's amrita in the Vedas. When the Vedas speak of soma, actually it is nothing other than milk. For milk, the Supa Shastra, who in fact the acharya of the Supa Shastra, which is the manual of cooking, is Bhima. Bhima. And Bhima, the cook of the Supa Shastra, describes 1008 preparations made simply for milk, of which paneer is just one, and chili paneer is the second. And the manner of chili paneer is maybe the third. But in this way, milk is given priority, and therefore, Sri Krishna, he chooses to appear eternally as a cowherd boy in order to represent this very deep science which I have tried to explain in a few words. The gopis of Vrindavan, because they are the source of the knowledge of Sri Krishna, which is intaked through the voice of the spiritual master by the disciple, therefore the gopis themselves represent every aspect of Vedic knowledge. Radha Gokulnanda Bhagwan ki jai, Sishita Lakshmanaman ki jai, Shigonithaya ki jai. Amongst the eight principal gopis, Lilita, Vishakha, Rangadevi, Sudevi, Tungavidya, etc., we find that every specific gopi personally personifies one aspect of Vedic knowledge. Amongst the eight principal gopis, some of the principal gopis are the greatest astrologers. Some of the principal gopis are the greatest of Shakuna Shastra, omens. One particular gopi out of the eight gopis is the personification of the 16 types of knowledge, which are then elaborated by Narada to the four Kumaras in the Chandogya Upanishad. 16 aspects of knowledge, the four Vedas, Rig, Yajur, Atharva, Sama, Itihas, Purana, Pancharatras, etc., etc., the Agamas. And one particular gopi personifies that. And in this way, you find that there is another gopi amongst the eight, which is the personification of Niti Shastra. Now, Niti Shastra is one of the 16, specifically one of the gopis are the personification of the Niti Shastra, and the Niti Shastra are the codes of conduct. Now, what a contradiction. The gopis who are a personification of the Vedas, and one particular gopi amongst the eight, which is the personification of Niti Shastra. I think it's not Vishakha, because Vishakha is Ramanand Rai. She's in fact the personification of Nyaya Shastra, the logic of argument and debate, which is why Vishakha appeared as Ramanand Rai. Everything is so connected. Every personality in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, the way they exemplified themselves, is originated in their Swarupa as one of the gopis. And therefore this particular gopi amongst the eight, whose name I now forget, I think it's Tungavidya, she herself personifies dharma. Now in this verse, dharmachari, that's to give up religious customs. We may meet, sometimes we may not meet. So what a contradiction. How is this possible? That now that we understand that the Vedas are personally personified in the form of the Ashtagopis, therefore how is it possible for a contradiction to appear? In the Dharma Shastra, there are many rules and regulations which are only meant to try to bring people to follow in the footsteps of the gopis and nothing else. So it's really important to understand some of the Dharma Shastras, because without Dharma, there is no basis of spiritual life, especially for conditioned souls. Which is why Lord Sri Krishna explains that apart from sadhu, apart from paritranaya sadhunam, that apart from giving bliss and protection to the devotees, dharma samsthapanarthaya, that to re-establish the principles of dharma, I descend millennium, or cosmic cycle after cosmic cycle, yuga after yuga. So now the gopis are giving up those very precepts of dharma. But before we focus, because you know it's very natural for people to say, yes, because they did that, I would do that too. So let's, for example, understand what some of those precepts of dharma are. So the personalities within this verse in particular are gopis. So now we refer slightly to the female dharma, because then we can understand what the gopis are contradicting or not contradicting. So in Dharma Shastra, it explains, Aghora Chakshupatiknedi Shiva Pashubya Subana Sumarchaha. In the Samaveda, to explain to females their dharma, it says, Aghora Chakshur Patiknedi, that a female should be sweet-eyed, gentle-eyed. Shiva Pashubya, a female should see God and animal as equal. Suvarchaha, treat them equally as the child, as the mother. And later on, we find that even though the personality of the various aspects of dharma are given to a female, nevertheless, a slight contradiction may appear philosophically, but then we'll try to explain the meaning behind it. And that is that a female, even though very humble and meek, and this is just one verse, there are unlimited number of verses. Nevertheless, although a female should be sweet-eyed, sweet-tongued, etc., etc., as this verse explains, when it comes to the family, samaragi shvashure bhava, samaragi shvashravam bhava, nanandani bhava adidevrishu, that a female in the home of family should be the lord of the husband's father, should be the lord of the husband's mother, should be the lord of the husband's sisters, should be the lord of the husband's brothers. This is a Vedic mantra in Rig Veda. Raja means king, Ragi means queen. So a bride in the home should be a queen of the father, the mother, the brother, and the sister-in-laws. Believe it, even the sister-in-laws. Now why is that? Because although a female at the same time is like Bhumi, that is the best word described in at least the Ayurveda for a female, Vasudhara, that she is the source, she is the mother of the entire world. Therefore this popular saying, Vasudeva Kutumbakam, that may the entire world unite as one family, that can only be possible, as the Rig Veda explains, when there is respect for women. Because while being extremely humble and soft and meek, at the same time, they deserve to be the lords, to be the queens. Not opposite, where someone is assertive and strong and, you know, very harsh in their mannerisms. Such a person should never be king or queen. So once again, we can understand the importance of humility, at least through the dharma of a female. So now we'll all understand, we'll all accept that this dharma for females should never be given up. So why is this verse saying dharmachari? That these gopis will give up dharma. Doesn't make sense. And later on, there are so many more important dharma for both male and females, which we won't get into now. But a point here is that the gopis, even though being personifications of the Vedas, and like, for example, we explained one of the Ashtagopis being the personification of astrology, etc., etc., all these various sciences that Krishna personally originated. What is the meaning of the word dharmachari? This last night, I was studying the Atharvaved, and the Atharvaved, there is an extremely nice revelation that Vyasadeva personally put into writing to elaborate on this aspect of the verse. Just two words, Dharmachari. And we need to refer now to the sacred and most celebrated Upanishad propagated post Chaitanya era. Not Isha Upanishad, but the Shri Gopal Thapanya Upanishad of the Tharva Veda. In that Upanishad of the second chapter, there is a nice story which explains this point extremely clearly. And I'll attempt to summarize this. So once upon a time, rather than keep reciting the Sanskrit, I'll just go through the English. Once upon a time, this Upanishad explains that having spent an entire night with Sri Krishna, the gopis realized that the sun has come out. And therefore we now need to go home to form Surya Namaskar, to offer, wake up our families, etc., etc. But my dear Lord, at this time, the Yamuna is at the most aggressive peak. How are we going to go back home? Because if we are not home in time, you'll get in trouble. And so would I. And so would all of us. So my dear Lord Krishna, how do we cross the Yamuna? Krishna explained, when you go to the Yamuna, say the following words. Say that if Krishna is a brahmachari, then give me way. The gopis are thinking, now is he really having a laugh? Okay, I mean, you know, we need to get home, so we'll try it. So the gopis then went to the river Yamuna in order to cross back to go home. And as they approached Yamuna, they saw it extremely aggressive in its most aggressive form at that early morning. And the gopis recited the words, that Made Yamuna, we need to cross over you. Now, if Krishna is a brahmachari, you would make way for us so we can go back home. Shh! Yamuna gave way. And the gopis crossed. Sometimes, you know, in life when things really happen that we don't expect, you don't question it. So they didn't question it, they just went back home. And then, the following night, Krishna, he appeared extremely late. You know, like sometimes we have times, you know, you come to my house at this time, you come to my house that time. Krishna came many, 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 many hours late. This is an entire description I'm giving, huh? From the Gopal Thapin Upanishad of the Tharva Veda, which is in fact revealed by Rishi Pipalada. When Krishna was late for his meeting the following day, the gopi said, Krishna, out of all people, why do you have bad time management? Why are you late? You're coming to meet us. Krishna said, because my guru had just come to Vrindavan and I went to serve him. Who's your guru? Durvasa Muni. So tell me a bit about guru, etc., etc. And then Lord Krishna began to describe the importance of guru. And then Krishna said, and because I was engaging in his service, that's why I was late. And the gopis were thinking, if Krishna is late to meet us while engaged in the service of a guru, we must also go to meet Durvasa Muni. So the gopi said, where is he? Durvasa. Krishna said, well, he's just on that side in that place in Vrindavan. I don't know the exact place. The gopi said, well, in that case, Krishna, we'll call it off for tonight. No leela, no pastimes. We're going to go straight to Durvasa Muni with pots and pots and pots of prasad to serve him. Because if he's good enough for you, he's good enough for us. So the gopis then said to Krishna, go back home. We're off to see Durvasa Muni. So they went to Durvasa Muni. Now Durvasa Muni, he was a person who would only have the juice of Durva grass. Durva is very similar to Kusha grass, the mats upon which we sit upon. It's more green. He would only have the juice of Durva grass. So Durvasa Muni was situated in his meditation, or meditating upon his personal lordship, Sri Krishna. And at that point, the gopis appeared. And naturally, Durvasa Muni realized that the gopis are the internal potency of Krishna. And therefore, he woke from his meditation. And he said to the gopis, how may I serve you? And the gopis said, oh, we're here to serve you. And in fact, we brought all of these pots of food and prasad to give to you. Now, Durvasa Muni said, look, I'm extremely old. My hands don't really work. And obviously, as you can see, I'm just in this pose, meditating upon... Anyway, I won't go into the detail, because I didn't want to break the rasa, the whole rasa between them, but meditating upon God. So if you really wish to feed me, because I'm obliged now to have your prasad, Therefore, one at a time, you can bring your pots to me and personally feed me. The gopis said, oh, okay, fine. So then the gopis, headed by Shrimati Radhika, the Upanishad explains, one at a time came forward and fed pots and pots and pots into the mouth of Durvasa Muni. Now these were many, 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 many pots. A lot of pots. And after that, the gopi said, okay, what a coincidence. The night's gone. It's daytime. We need to get back home. But the Yamuna was aggressive last night. The Yamuna would probably be, once again, extremely aggressive. Durvasa Muni, how do we get back home? Because you know what? We didn't tell our husbands before leaving home. That's not really one of the Vedic principles, you know? Need to at least leave a message, a post-it note. At least a message saying that we'll be back soon. Nobody knows we've left home. So how do we get back? Durvasa Muni said, go to the Yamuna and say to the Yamuna that if Durvasa Muni has ever broken his fast of only having the juice of Durva, then you would turn even more aggressive. And if Durvasa Muni has never broken his fast, then Yamuna will give you way. The gopis again were confused. Second time round. What is going on? Again, you know, you don't question. You can question Krishna. Krishna, why did you do this to me? Why did you do that to me? But to a rishi like Durvasa, you don't question Durvasa. Very dangerous. In fact, the manifestation of Lord Shiva through Rudra, anger. You don't want to upset Durvasa. They said, okay, fine, let's go. So the gopis then went to the Yamuna. And the Yamuna was actually much more aggressive. Tides had risen, etc. You know, they couldn't swim in their saris, etc., etc. Half of the pearls would have got lost in the river. So in a very, very difficult heart, they said to the Yamuna, that the Yamuna, if Durvasa has never broken his fast, they said the word fast extremely lightly, the fast of only having Durva juice, then give us way. The Yamuna immediately opened and the gopis crossed. And again, when good things happen, you just don't question it. You think, Devecha, Devere Gatana, that by the mercy of the Lord, somehow it's happened. And then the gopis went back home. Now, the following month, when the full moon, because you know we have two pakshas, Krishna paksh, Shukla paksh, then Krishna paksh expired, Shukla paksh came, and then the end of the month is when the moon is now full. Therefore, Purna, Purnima. At that moment, the gopis came. This is an exact translation of the Atharva. I'm not adding anything in. Okay? The gopis came to the Rasa Leela, and once again, having enjoyed Shri Krishna through the Rasa dance, at the end of it, rather than go home, the word described is Gandharvika, that the form of Gopi, who is Cupid of Cupids of Cupids of Cupids, Shri Radha, the daughter of Maharaj Vrishabhanu and Kirtida, she asked Krishna this question, that how is it possible for the Yamuna to have given us way twice, when in reality, you know, you're not a brahmachari. If anybody's a brahmachari, you're not a brahmachari. And Durvasa, he's definitely broken his fast because we personally fed him. So how is it possible, my dear Lord? And Radhika asked this question, for the Yamuna to now give us, had given us way. And Krishna said, because we did this for you. And that is why our vows have never been broken. Similarly, Dharmachari, all of the gopis, every one of those gopis, now none of the gopis had, you know, fake marriages or weird, strange marriages. They had Vedic Vivaha Samskaras because there was nothing else around, you know, where they both take vows. The priest just sits there listening. The bride and groom stand up. The groom performs the yagya, the groom performs all of the ceremony, as the Vedas explain, and as once again Bhatta Goswami explains, because they were qualified. Then the female recites her own vows, Brahme Patiyana Hapantaha Kalapatam, that I will now always follow in your footsteps, my dear husband. May Lord Shri Krishna join us together in marriage. The wife takes so many similar vows, even to this day, in some orthodox Brahmin families. The bride takes her own vows. The gopis took every one of those vows. But because they engaged in Krishna's service in the very same way that Lord Shri Krishna and Durvasa Muni did not do it for themselves but for somebody else, therefore dharma remained intact. And therefore, this verse doesn't contradict dharma. A very important point, because it's very easy. Dharma chari, whatever. Gopis did it, I'll do it. But if you did it, you're not going to get anywhere, really, are you? If you break even, road limits, you're going to get a fine. And if you keep doing it, probably get stuck in jail. So in this way, actually, dharma is never broken. And the Gopal Thapanya Upanishad, the Dharma Veda, Sri Pripalada Rishi, describes this point exclusively and puts a lot of attention on this. And I've only attempted to summarize. Now, if we go back to this pastime, that Lord Shri Krishna and Srimati Radhika, this notion of dharma and how dharma is to be conducted is extremely difficult, and therefore the Vedas try to explain. Now let's move away for this moment from the dharma of the gopis and Shri Krishna, etc., etc. And now, of course, so-called rasika devotees, if that term ever exists per se, because obviously every person should be in some relationship with Shri Krishna, they would obviously explain about why dharma is given up in order to relate to Shri Krishna, etc., etc. But from the Vedic perspective, this is never to be used as an excuse for any conditioned soul to break dharma. And therefore these dispositions of Shastra, such as the Gopal Thapanya Upanishad, are therefore described. Now let's move away from this for one moment and let's take our attention to the Mahabharata. So the Mahabharata, the very first and most largest poem. The Mahabharata is the one text that Vyasas do not publish. This is explained in the Vishnu Purana, that although 28 Vyasas have manifested in this world in terms of kalpas, Vyasas actually don't write Mahabharata. But because Narayana Prabhu Swayam, because Krishna Dvaipayana is actually Lord Narayana himself, only then is the Mahabharata composed. Because in actuality, there are 1 billion verses called the Purana Samhita, from which 400,000 are taken, and then the Ashtadasha Puranas, or the 18 Puranas, of which Bhagavatam is one, consisting of 18,000, is compiled. Now, from that one book called the Purana Samhita, consisting of 1 billion verses, Jiva Goswami in the Tattva Sandarbha explains that 100,000 was taken, from which the Mahabharata was compiled. So the scriptures are eternal, vast. Now in the Mahabharata, when Vyasadev describes, Mahabharata is exclusively about the pastimes of Shri Krishna, nothing else. Everything is totally about Shri Krishna. And therefore, when the brother of Madhvacharya, Shri Shayanacharya, Shayan's a very interesting name, it means sleep, the Lord of Sleep. Not Kumbhakarna, Lord of Sleep. Lord of Sleep is Lord Vishnu. So Shayanacharya, when he compiled the only commentary on the Vedas, and then Madhvacharya compiled the Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya, which is the only commentary in the Mahabharata, he explains from the very first verse on how the Mahabharata is only and exclusively meant to explain about Shri Krishna. Obviously, it cancels out esoteric topics, which is why Narada inspired Vyas to unveil the Chatushloki Bhagavat into the 18,000 verses by which we can understand Krishna, Vrindavan, Leela. But going back to Mahabharata, we find in the war, in the Kurukshetra Yudha, so many apparent mistakes by both Kaurava and Pandava Senas. Everybody fought against the rules that Bhishma had laid down the day and the night before the war. You know, we find Dhrishtadyumna, the chief, the commander-in-chief of the Pandava Sena. The commander-in-chief of Krishna's army in the spiritual world is Vishwaksena. And Vishwaksena is described very similar as Lord Vishnu. And Vishwaksena appears in the material world as Ganapati, Ganesh. As Vaishnavas, we have a very different story of Ganesh. The story that is around the entire globe about the birth of Ganesh is very different to the story and birth of Ganesh in the Brahma Vivarta Purana, wherein it explains in the very first verse that Ganesh is a personal representation of Sri Krishna. And how actually Krishna was the one who personally came on the plea of Parvati to give Ganapati the head of the elephant. But anyway, that's another story. So this person, Dhrishtadyumna, who is the commander-in-chief of Krishna's army, how is it possible for him to have severed the head of Dronacharya while he was situated in meditation, nishastra, unarmed? This is extremely bad. This is extremely bad, and Krishna allowed it to happen. So many other apparent mistakes were committed by both sides. Now, after the Mahabharata war, when in fact Yudhishthira entered into what we will call depression, and he actually did, he was very upset. It took so many people to convince Yudhishthira that the Mahabharata war was justified. And Sri Krishna, he spoke so many words to Yudhishthira, which is why the Mahabharata is 100,000 verses long. And then one of the points that Krishna explained to Yudhishthira is that where the opposite person is not fighting according to the principles of dharma, it's very difficult to then counteract using those very same principles. And therefore, it is okay and it is fine that for the higher purpose of establishing my rule in this universe, for us to then break dharma in order to deal with others who are breaking dharma. And the actual verse is, Yudhishthira, if we had fought this war on the laws of dharma established by Bhishma, which were being broken time after time after time by the god of Asenas, we would never have won this war. And just because of your attachment to dharma, the entire human race would have become extinguished. That is actually the only reason why all of us are here today, because the Mahabharata war was won by the Pandava Senas. As in the real Pandava Senas, yeah? Not even back to the Pandava Senas. And then Yudhishthira explains, but then it's very difficult to understand what dharma and dharma isn't. You know, I may go out and justify myself saying he broke dharma in my eyes, therefore I'll break dharma in his eyes. Therefore Krishna says that actually what you're saying is correct. And therefore the only person that can re-sanction what dharma and dharma is not is me, Krishna explains. And because I personally sanctioned every one of our activities, because without my will, not even a blade of grass moves. Therefore, only I know what is dharma, what is not dharma, and how dharma should be observed. Now let's go back a previous yuga to Treta during the fight of Bali and Sugriva. What happened? Something very similar. First, because you know the argument can be, but Krishna took a vow of not to fight in the Mahabharata. Therefore, you know, he was, you know, you can't really blame him in a court of law. He was just a sarathi. The sarathi is a very, very, according to Vedic class, is a very, very low type of work, extremely humble, where you sit literally behind a horse, literally, and you're just rolling along. So therefore Krishna didn't fight, so it's a bit different. But in the war, in the fight of Sugriva and Bali, Lord Ramchandra personally, incognito, standing behind trees, he fired an arrow. He interrupted the fight between two brothers, two Kshatriyas, two Vanaras, and he killed one of them, namely Bali.